Welcome to the Parkinson's Recovery Support Group for August of 2021. As you well know, this is Robert. I am your support person, your guide, your instructor, your resource get-to guy, and I'm available to you to support your successful journey down the road to recovery. Thank you so much for being a member of Parkinson's Recovery. I have a couple of questions that I want to speak to that are sent in previously. If you have a question or a topic you'd like to discuss, of course, you can always call in and we can discuss that live here, or you can type it into the chat room. First question that I received is the following. Hi, Robert. You have mentioned in the past that you are concerned about 5G wireless, quote, pollution and Parkinson's. Could you discuss this in a little more detail? I would be most delighted to. Why am I concerned about 5G wireless? If you look at the research evidence that has been done primarily on cell phone use, which would have been based on 4G rather than 5G, there is a lot of evidence indicating we all need to be concerned about exposure to that source of radiation. In preparation for this presentation, I did a search on what's the recent evidence specifically on 5G and as related to Parkinson's. My answer for you is it is so new. I mean, after all, 5G is just being mounted in the largest cities of the world, and the smaller cities obviously don't even have 5G yet. There's really scant evidence on really 5G as it affects neurological conditions. So do I have any solid research evidence to report? Well, no. I have a second comment that I want to make when I looked at the research evidence. One of the reasons I got discouraged about publishing articles in scientific journals is that all of a sudden I realized that a lot of the researchers had questionable ethics. I think that's probably the case now. So the companies, the big corporations that are behind 5G are large. They are well-funded. They have limitless resources. And, of course, they're going to fund studies that would report that 5G is going to cause no health problems whatsoever. There are people out there, and you might have seen courses that they offer that will say, we need to mount resistance to 5G. We need to stop this happening. It's going to create all sorts of health problems. I'm not one of those people. 5G is here to stay. And why is that? Well, the future happens to be driverless automobiles. Driverless automobiles require 5G to function. So nobody's going to stop it. I don't care how much energy you put behind it. It's here to stay. What is 5G? I just want to provide all of you just a very simple explanation. The 4G that we're most of us now operating on come from these huge cell towers, and we've all seen them along the interstate and even in cities. They tend to be on top of mountains, and they have these big poles with all these kind of devices hung on to them, and they are able to transmit the frequencies that we need to operate our phones, our smartphones. Now, the 5G operates on a very different kind of a technology. The actual transmission devices are put onto telephone poles, and you'll see, for example, in a city like San Francisco, almost every block on a telephone pole, you will see a 5G transmission apparatus. And there's also websites that will show you the concentration of 5G in especially large cities like San Francisco. In San Francisco, it is totally plastered with 5G, so there's a lot of exposure to 5G in that particular city. Now, what's the scientific evidence for exposure to, for example, cell phone radiation? Well, it is mixed, as is in the case with any research evidence. And, of course, what I'm suggesting is some of the studies you can't really trust. I'm sorry, hello, who did them? How were they funded? What were they designed to produce? Second of all, even in reviews of studies, the people who do the reviews really are not very well trained as researchers. So they'll count significance and say a study was good if it had significance, and if it didn't have significance, it wasn't good. So there are lots of issues when you look at actually the scientific evidence on the transmission of radiation from the use of cell phones and the emission of frequencies from 5G transmission sources. So why am I concerned about this as a device? Well, there are, in Europe, I might add, there are just a lot of researchers there that are adamant that it causes a long list of conditions. And these would include conditions like cancer, especially brain cancer, all sorts of autoimmune conditions, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a pretty strong body and compelling body of people, researchers, particularly in Europe, that really feel like this particular radiation is the health problem of the century. Why is it then that I would be concerned when people with Parkinson's clearly are not reporting to me they're noticing a big difference when they use their smartphones and when they don't? Here's the reason. The effects are very gradual and they build up over time, little by little. I see a lot of young people with these white kind of devices in their ears that are essentially their phones. I want to say, oh my goodness, every time I see one of those, I think, oh, I hope you're not going to have brain cancer in 20 years. So they're not noticing any effects today, because it doesn't happen that quickly, but the effects accumulate gradually, little by little over time. The mitochondria, which is the energy source of the cells, they are compromised when you have exposure to this radiation, little by little, year in, year out. And eventually, I really predict, and this really, I want to say, is a prediction, that the health challenge of the century is not going to be something like a deadly virus such as the coronavirus. The health problem, the challenge of the century, really is going to be exposure to this radiation that is emitted by the frequencies needed to operate our cell phones. Now, again, there is quite a bit of evidence indicating that these do cause considerable problems. They do a lot of animal studies. Those are pretty chilling results. And, of course, we do have some human studies as well. So I have to say, speaking as a researcher, I got very frustrated because when I look at the evidence, it's very conflicting. And so you begin to think to yourself, okay, what's the real result? Well, think logically. And that's really, I guess, what I like to do. Okay, you have a sensitive electromagnetic system in your body. Electricity is being transmitted. And that's why we're able to function. That's why we can move our fingers and move our feet from one step to the next. It's sensitive, and these are electrical impulses. So all of a sudden, we're sending other frequencies into our body that are inconsistent and antithetical to the natural frequencies that are needed to sustain life in the body. So there's a contradiction there that's just a natural contradiction. And again, I think what happens is the mitochondria, in other words, the energy sources at the level of the cell, gradually die off or are compromised, which creates, again, some additional health problems. I don't have a specific study that I can point to that would say, okay, here, look at this. We've got a sample of 1,000 people who have Parkinson's. They did an excellent design of pre-post, post-test kind of analysis, and we say definitively that the use of cell phones, and particularly with exposure to 5G, causes health problems. And I want to say it won't. That's not what's going to happen, because what you really need to do is to look longitudinally over 10, 20, even 30 years. I think then you'll see a very chilling result. So I don't think in the next 10 years or even 15, you're going to see any compelling evidence that would suggest, oh, yeah, that's a real threat to the use of the 5G technology. But it will, I think, little by little begin to show in the health problems that people experience. So I'd like to say there's enough evidence out there for me to say, look, we're not going to stop this from happening. It's here to stay. What I really recommend to everybody is get serious about protecting yourself from exposure to this particular radiation. And the one strong recommendation I'd like to make is that when you use your cell phone, do not put the cell phone next to your ear. Because again, that's a direct exposure of the radiation to your skin. Instead, put headphones on and connect the headphones to your phone. That's what I do when I talk on the phone. And of course, that's what I'm doing right now. So do we want to say, oh gosh, cell phones are terrible? Well, no. We've got a number of applications of programs that have been able to be used on cell phones that help people with Parkinson's that have walking difficulties or that are able to diagnose certain conditions, alert diabetics that sugar is low, et cetera, et cetera. So there are a number of wonderful actual applications. And actually, there's also now the transmission of energy frequencies through cell phones, through some companies that are now doing just that. So cell phones do have a beneficial effect. And I'd be the last person to say, well, stop using them. I'm using one right now. But I do think that insulating yourself from their effects can be very, very, very important over the long run. And I also want to say if you have children, whether they're young adults or whether they're tiny children, I want to strongly suggest that you help them learn how to use this technology so that they can be as protected as possible. There are also some devices that essentially alter the energy fields that are connected with us humans that reduce the effects of the exposure to all of the cell phone use. Some of those, I think, really do work, and some of them really could be considered. So there's some pendulums that some folks sell that have done a lot of research in this, and those might be worth considering as well. In the end, again, I just want to say I think reducing your exposure is the one step I want to make strong for everyone listening here in the program today. Reduce your exposure. Remember, you're going to say to yourself, I've been using a cell phone for 5 years. I'm okay. I haven't noticed any effects. Well, no, you won't. Again, the effects are gradual, little by little, week by week, year by year. And what I want to say is the chilling anticipation I have is the young people who have these devices in their ears as phones, I think a number of those folks, sadly, will begin to see some very serious health problems 20, 25, 30 years from now. So it's a serious problem. It's here to stay. And I think what we all need to do is just to accept the fact, okay, this is potentially an issue. And all we need to do is to learn the steps we can take to protect ourselves from exposure to this very specific radiation. Of course, remember, we've got radiation. We've got exposure from really lots of different sources. This is just one source. But it is a frequency that really has the potential to cause much more neurological damage, I think, than any other frequency. So that's the reason for my alarm about the 5G. There are some courses that I've actually taken from people who are experts in this, and they send out alarming concerns about the effects of this. And I really trust their expertise and their ability to look into the evidence. And so one of the reasons why I've gotten on board is the people who are putting that information out, I know personally, are reputable. They have integrity. They're not exposing any particular ideas out of self-interest. It is just that that's what they see in terms of the research evidence. So it's not an immediate problem. It's not going to cause any immediate health concerns. But in the long run, yes, I think what you're going to find is, again, what I come down to is I think this is the health problem of the 21st century. Now, a second question that I was asked to discuss and talk about is the following. Hello, Robert. Could you talk a bit more today's call about antihistamines for COVID? I'd be delighted to. So I actually had sort of a random connection and discussion with my own naturopath doctor, Dr. Faber, about a month ago. And out of the blue, before we ended our conversation, she said to me, oh, I want to make sure to mention to you the way to address the symptoms of COVID are to make sure that you get using antihistamines. And then the words that she used that really rang a wonderful bell inside my heart was, oh, it'll knock it right out. Now, whether that's true or not, obviously, remains to be seen. But as I thought about her recommendation, I thought, well, of course, that makes good sense. So COVID is creating rampant inflammation throughout the body. So if you can do anything to reduce that and to make sure that, for example, the ability of the lungs to function as they need to function to get enough oxygen to the body, well, you need to reduce the inflammation not only throughout the body but specifically in the lungs. And the antihistamines are something that can really do that very well. So after I had my conversation with Dr. Faber, I was thinking about it and thought, well, it makes sense that if anybody in my family actually winds up experiencing the symptoms of COVID or is found to actually have COVID, then what can you do about it? Now, I think one of the steps that some people obviously need to make is to go to an emergency room. But of course, my goodness, think about it. That's probably not the best choice because everybody there has infected with this disease. You're going into a very highly contaminated environment. And there's another reason why I really would be hesitant personally to go into an emergency room, and that is the ventilators that they use, as I understand it, are not actually sterilized from patient to patient. Now, how do I know that? Well, by chance, I happened to actually find that I was able to interview the actual inventor of the ventilators that are used in most hospitals today. He said that the only way to really sterilize the ventilators is through steam, hot steam, not through chemicals. And so he got very alarmed that, particularly in the early stages of the emergence of the COVID-19 infection, so many people were dying. They were on ventilators. And he actually called several hospitals and said, look, do you understand that you've got to be able to sterilize these with hot steam? And the response that he got back was, oh, no, no, we don't need to do that. We've got approval to use these particular antibacterial substances. And so they refused to follow his recommendation. So I think if you'll just think about it, if you've got somebody that has the infection and they're using a ventilator and you're not able to remove the infection in the instrument itself, it's going to obviously spread to another person. So I thought, oh, goodness. Now, whether the hospitals are doing a better job now, I don't know. But I do know that that's clearly, in the long run, a challenge and an issue. So what can you do? Yes, you may need to go to a hospital, emergency room, but how about another natural approach? And so my doctor said antihistamines are an approach, a solution that you, I think, can find will be very, very beneficial. So I thought to myself, okay, we have small children in our family. What happens if one of them gets it? The children are now just about going back to school. So what in the world can we do for these precious souls of ours who are children? And if they get infected, how can we help them get well from that actual infection? So the thing I did was I just emailed my doctor, and I said, can you send me the high-quality antihistamine that you would recommend that we use, in fact, if anybody in the family winds up getting this COVID-19 infection? And so she did, and the bottle that she sent was Hista Plus, which I think you can actually get on the Internet. So we have actually a couple of bottles of that that, in fact, if we're going to have to be able to use, we can use for our children or for anybody in the family that winds up getting that particular infection. So that's what I did as a step in the event that, in fact, we have the terrible problem of having a member of our family who has actually been infected by this COVID-19. Now, if you look at antihistamines, that's a supplement. She also said, by the way, you can use this higher quality of antihistamine, but you can go to a compounding pharmacy or a pharmacy of any kind, Rite Aid, you name it, and they're going to have some antihistamine products. These are foods that create inflammation, so you can also have diets that are called antihistamine diets. And these are diets that avoid the kind of foods that do create a lot of inflammation in the body. Things like mustard, things that are obviously foods that would be difficult for the body to digest. So you can look on the internet, and the search that I would recommend that you make is antihistamine diet. And pretty quickly, you'll see a number of listings of food. They're all pretty consistent of the foods that you want to make sure to avoid. And so it's more a question of avoiding foods that create the high histamines in the body that, again, create a lot of inflammation. So another way to be able to have a good antihistamine approach is through a dietary approach. So if, again, anybody in your family system or any of your friends happen to be infected, you can just make a strong recommendation to them that there are certain foods that they need to stop eating, at least for right now, while they're healing from that very specific infection. So I thought that was a wonderful suggestion. Now, you're not hearing that from anybody else, but it seemed to me, if you'll step back and ask yourself, is that a logical suggestion? And I think the answer is, well, yes. There's no doubt about it that that would be a winning approach for anybody in your family system, or even, of course, yourself, that happens to all of a sudden, unexpectedly, find that you have the COVID-19 or even the Delta variant, which seems to be much more quickly spreading here in our world, unfortunately. Now, finally, those are the two kind of questions that I had to make a brief discussion and presentation on. I finally wanted to say that I have been putting up now, particularly in the courses, some videos that discuss the issues of how really can you go about healing from the inside out. I mean, what's the basic bottom line issue when it comes to why is it that when people age, they begin to have more serious and more problematic symptoms and health problems and are diagnosed with more complicating chronic diseases? So I think a lot of people hold the expectation that as they age, they're going to have more and more problematic symptoms. Well, I don't believe that's true, but it is the case that many people do experience that. So what's the explanation? Why does that happen? Well, stepping back from the specific focus on neurological challenges, what I've done is I thought about, all right, what is it about aging that creates these problems? Why do people's bodies fall apart? I think the answer that I've drawn after really years of thinking about this is that particularly with trauma and with stress, we, as we age, as we begin to put a few years on our body's lifespan, we tend to have a lot of tension in the muscles. We tend to tighten up all of our muscles, not consciously, but unconsciously. So we're leading through the experience of a body that is full of tightness. So what does that mean? That means that the circulation throughout the body is compromised. If you'll just think about it, if you've got a tight set of tissues in your body that are restricted, that are gripping very tightly, how are you going to get the circulation through those tissues? Well, you're not. The circulation is going to be blocked. Over time, what we now know is that the capillaries, those tiny little passageways that send the circulation to the tissues, begin to be blocked off. They're narrowed. They're compromised. So the blood that normally flows through when we are young, all of a sudden, instead of seeing a flood of current of the circulation flowing through those tiny little passageways, what you see when they do actually images of this is a pretty feeble flow. It's as if a dam is blocking the natural flow of all of that through the body. So if you just think logically, all right, so if the nutrition is not getting to the cells, then we're not going to be able to renew our cells. Our cells are going to die off more quickly. The cells that are compromised are going to continue to be compromised and create chronic health conditions. Second of all, we have waste that accumulates in our cells as a natural course of the fact that we're living in a very polluted world. How do you get rid of the waste if you can't get the nutrition to the cells? Well, you can't. So the cells become more and more toxic. That's why people begin to develop more and more disease states. So I think one of the big issues is oxygen is not getting to the cells, and so the life source of how we sustain our body's ability to live a vibrant life is compromised. Then what do you do about that? Well, I think the solution I've gone to is this PEMF, pulsed electromagnetic field therapy. That, as it turns out, the research shows, really does open up the circulation to the extremities of the body. So that's what I'm doing myself. I do it not every day, but every other day. They recommend you do it twice a day. I don't. Somehow I'm able to do that. That's too much for me, but I can do it almost every day. And I think it's right. That's exactly what happens, is that you do get an ability to rejuvenate your cells at the extremities and throughout the body, because you're opening up the circulation through these tiny, tiny little capillaries. Remember, the circulation through the veins and the arteries is only about 25% of the circulation. 75% is through these tiny, tiny little passageways, some of them the equivalent of the diameter of a cell, which is really small. Those tend to close down first. And then some of them are the diameter of, for example, a hair. And that's a little larger. You can obviously send through more of the passageways of the nutrition through, and the blood through, something that's the diameter of the width of a cell. But still, that's pretty gosh darn small. So I think that's one of the kind of fundamental therapies I'd recommend any of you to take seriously. And again, that's just a fundamental approach for making sure that your body can regenerate itself. Now, am I saying specifically for the symptoms you experience? Well, who's to say? It might actually have a long-term beneficial effect. That's what I would certainly hope. But in terms of the quality of life as you age, I think it is at the fundamental level. Now, because of the success of this, I guess there are a number of different options out there for PEMF. There's one that I use, so if you want to pursue this, feel free to call me. I can tell you the one that I use. I think there's some others that are being newly developed. I don't know much about those, but it may be there's several out there that might be really worth considering. So we've answered two of the questions that were submitted previously, and I just discussed the one really a set of videos that I just shot here this month that discuss the long-term process of having a stress throughout your life, having restrictions in your body, and then the problem is the circulation is compromised. And so what do you do about it? What I'm suggesting, PEMF, I think, is the solution. And, of course, what's the problem with neurological challenges? It is the fact that the circulation is not getting to the cells. And so how are you going to get rid of all the toxins that might be blocking and clogging up your neural passage if you can't get the circulation to it, the blood to it? So you've got to open up all of that. So now let me move to open up some discussions with those of you who called in and just say hello. Thank you for calling in. And again, you might have called in and you just are listening. It's just that's your access point. So we're just going to say hi. But if you have questions or you have discussion you'd like to have about any topic whatsoever, please let me know, or follow up, or any other insights to the questions that we've already addressed. Please do so. So what I'd like to first do is open up the line to a caller from Arizona in Phoenix and say hello. How are you and what's up?
Hi, this is Isabel.
Hi, Isabel.
Hey, I always want to say I always appreciate your prep work that you do in preparing for these calls. Always appreciate you. And I want to also stress with COVID, my daughter is an ICU COVID nurse. She's on her third wave. And the biggest thing we can do is prevention, because there's people dying this way that should not die this way. And I'm sorry, it's so hard for me to talk about the people who are passing away from this. So just wanted to stress prevention is number one key with this virus.
So can you say more about what steps they can take to make sure that they have this prevention? Is it through the inoculations, or what are the kind of steps can they take?
Well, in my opinion, but you know, people feel very strong one way or the other, so I definitely don't want to open up things that people, you know, are going to get upset about. But I'm seeing what my daughter goes through and her boyfriend, who is a hospitalist, and seeing the type of cases that they're having, I chose to be vaccinated, and I keep choosing to wear a mask and try to, you know, do the common sense of not going in with loud, you know, with a number of people in crowds, washing my hands, those type of things. But that's what I've chosen for myself. So folks have to choose what they want for themselves and what's going to work for them.
Yeah, thank you, Isabel. Well, you know, your solutions have been similar to ours. I wear a mask everywhere. It doesn't matter where.
Yeah.
And second of all, we've actually reduced the kind of things we do with exposure to a lot of people. So, for example,
yeah.
we were thinking, maybe we should go to a movie. And then it was, no, we don't want to be around all those people. Some of them may
yeah.
have the, so, you know, we're just not going into crowded restaurants or crowded places. They have a little event here in Olympia on Saturdays that are, you know, for families, and they'd be fun to do, but there are a lot of people. No, we're not going to go there, not right now.
Yeah.
We'll be
well,
able
and
to
most
return.
People are going to be, most people are going to be fine, right, here in Arizona. 93% of the folks who get COVID are going to be fine. 7% are being hospitalized. And of that 7%, a large number are passing. And you definitely don't want to go on a ventilator, and you definitely don't want to go on an ECMO machine.
You're saying that, too. That's what I was mentioning earlier. You're saying that's also
yeah.
the experience of your daughter?
Yeah, because most of them don't get off of it, which is very sad. They just had last week three young women who had just given birth to babies at that same hospital passed away last week, three of them. And it's very sad to leave, you know, to go to hospital, having the most one of the most you know, beautiful experiences of your life and pass away. So anyhow, it's hard for me to talk about. It's heartbreaking, and it's hard. It's hard on our medical teams out there who are doing this work. My daughter cries every shift, and she cries, you know, at the beginning, at the end of every shift. So it's a tough. We should not be losing these folks. We should not be dying.
No. Well, Isabel, did you happen to hear my earlier comments about sterilizing those ventilators?
Yes, and I have no comment. I don't know anything about that, but I'm definitely going to be talking to my daughter after she's done with her shift tonight and ask her her opinion, because they use ventilators on a regular basis.
Yeah, you might mention that to her, because the man who was the inventor that I interviewed was so concerned about that. He said there's no way you can reduce the deposits of infection in the ventilators if you don't sterilize them with steam, hot steam. You know, and it may be that she could convince the management that while they may still want to use the chemicals, maybe they still could also do the steam as just a second backup.
Yes, I'm definitely going to mention that to her. And then also, too, as they're treating this virus, they're learning new things. And they're finding with this new Delta variant, they're finding it harder to treat the folks. What worked the last two waves isn't necessarily working as well this way for them.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah, but there's a lot of stuff, you know, that just isn't talked about on the news and you don't hear about. And that I hear from her and her, like I said, her boyfriend, who's a hospitalist. So they kind of tell me these stories and I'm just blown away. I definitely don't want anyone to get COVID. And I pray for those who do.
Oh, I do. And I guess that's why I was so excited, Isabel, when I heard my own doctor say, well, there's something that you can do if you get it. I thought, oh, great.
Yeah.
What is it?
Well,
that's pretty exciting.
And most people are going to be fine, right?
Yes, that's right.
They'll do it with no problems. Most people are going to be wonderful, but I still say that no one should have to die from this.
No, I so agree. That's not the ending we would want for anybody.
No. So anyhow, thank you for letting me talk a little bit about that. Thank you.
Well,
thank you for
your thoughts and your reflections and your recommendations for all of us to be inspired by. And thank you for calling in today, Isabel.
Thank you.
Many blessings. And now let me open up the line to Bill. Hello, Bill. Are you there?
Hey, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you. What's up with you?
The last month I've been going through a couple of your courses for a second time, and I just wanted to thank you for doing all that huge amount of work, gathering all that material together.
Well, you're welcome, Bill. I'm glad it sounds like it's been useful for you.
Yeah, definitely, particularly the two, I guess, that you started with, the rock solid walking and the tame tremors. There's just so much, both of them are just chock full of good information and tips and things you can try. So I really encourage anyone who hasn't looked at that or considered that to do so, because it's in a condensed form that you can take a quick look at and see if it appeals to you, and then can give you more information if you're if it strikes your interest. So I really couldn't recommend that more. I know you did a superb job of pulling together radio interviews and just years worth of work on your part. So it's all there, just waiting to help somebody.
Well, thank you, Bill, for that support. That means so much, and that it obviously made my day today to hear that. And, of course, I think if you've described it is my thought. So there are so many different kinds of options and steps people can take. And so the idea is that I pop out a finding that's recommended by researchers or practitioners or some kind of result that we've been able to unearth from an interview. So the idea is we have a brief presentation that's only 3 or 4 minutes. And so my idea is people can look at that and they can say, that was good. Let me investigate that. And they can also say, I don't think so, and then go on to the next one. So
right.
Not a question of, you know, spending a lot of time on any of them because there's so many possibilities. The questions are which are the ones that are, you know, you're called out to. And then if that's something that really you are called out to, then my whole goal is to say, okay, let me give you enough information so you can really understand what this is and take some action if you want to.
Right. That's the beauty of it to me, is that it's presented in a sort of neutral manner. So it's up to the person looking at it if they want to pursue it or not. It's not tendentious in any way. So
to
me, that's
great. Right. Oh, that's wonderful to hear, Bill. And, of course, you know, in the end, if I look at all of those different suggestions and ideas and programs and therapies and methods, they all we know are going to be successful for some people. That's why we're putting them up there. But we don't know if it's going to be successful for the person that's looking at it. We don't have a clue.
Right.
So
right.
My feeling is, look, I think you really have to make your own decisions about what you're called out to do. And I think if people really do use their own gut instinct, they'll make really good decisions.
Yeah, I agree. So anyway, thank you for that. I know it represents just a tremendous amount of work on your part, but I hope, you know, if anybody's considering it, I would urge them to pick one that applies most to their issues and just go for it. And you can work your way through it slowly. I mean, I went through everything a second time over the last few weeks, and that's helpful too, because you notice things you didn't notice the first time through.
Well, thank you, Bill, for those comments and those insights and perspectives on your own experience with several of the courses. I'll put some links in the notes for people if they want to look into that a little bit further.
Yeah. So thank you again.
Well, thank you, Bill, and thank you for calling in today to our August support group gathering. So I'm checking to see if we've got any chat room discussions or any notes that were put in the questions and answers field. Looks like we don't. Let me just say to all of you who are connecting in, even listening to this replay, that if you have any follow-up questions you'd like to ask or topics you'd like for me to investigate or research, I'll be happy to do that. Just send me an email or call me, and we'll take action. The cell phone number that I have is 360-789-1658. I may be able to answer live. If I don't, really just leave a message, say, call me, I've got a question or I've got a topic I want to discuss. I'd be happy to respond. So even though we just do this support group gathering once a month at the end of the month, I'm here available, and I may or may not have a lot of information about the topic you'd like to discuss, but I can certainly do some investigations given the wealth of resources that are available at my fingertips and all the people that I now have met and have interviewed on Parkinson's Recovery Radio and the research that I've done as well. After, gosh, that's now been over 2 decades of doing this work. So thank you so much for being a Parkinson's Recovery member. And, of course, that is what's happening here on the shores of, you guessed it, the Puget Sound, where all the women are smart. All the men are, of course, handsome, and all of the children are profoundly loved. Know that by virtue of the fact you are listening to this support group gathering in August of 2021, that indeed you are, in your own time, in your own way, making your own choices successfully journeying down the road to recovery. May you have a spectacular September. And again, let me know how I might be able to provide some additional support, guidance, and help to your journey down the road to recovery. Good day.